Welcome to Naturopath Connections. This is an interview for Silver Tank Radio. I'm Deborah Sophia Magdalene, and today I'm delighted to be interviewing dear friend Anaya Sophia. Anaya, are you in France at the moment?
I certainly am. I'm at the base of the Pyrenees Mountains.
And you've got a bed and breakfast there, haven't you?
Yes. Myself and Pete run our own little mystical bed and breakfast, taking people around, showing them all the places. It's absolutely wonderful.
Fabulous. Now, we've been Facebook friends for many years, and it was a delight to meet up with you in Glastonbury earlier this year. And, you know, I was very, very impressed with the workshop that you ran on, Fierce Feminine, and your work has sort of evolved over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely changed, and in the last year, quite radically so. But I think that's because, apparently, according to my hormones, I'm coming out of menopause soon. So I've passed that midway perimenopause stage, and now I'm really getting into, you know, the deeper aspects. And my work has changed on a dime to really mimic that deepening, I guess.
Yeah, interesting. Can you just give us some background into your journey and, you know, sort of what's led you to being where you are today? Just very briefly.
Very, very briefly. I think the most important thing was when I was 7, I saw and ran to what looked like a homeless man on the steps of the Sacré-Cœur in Paris with my parents, and he wasn't a homeless man at all. As far as I'm concerned now, and in a summary, he was an angel. He was an angel, and we had this beautiful moment between our eyes. And I went in search of what I saw in those eyes forever. First of all, I went via the path of men.
The path of men.
Let's remember that look. The path of men. And, you know, had the odd glimpse every now and again. But by the time I got to my 30s, I realised the path of men may not be where it is. So I started to go in. My first training was Kundalini Yoga. Became a student, followed by being a teacher, followed by being a teacher trainer. This then led to my own personal womb work. I had a problem, like an abnormality in my cervix for a couple of years, and it wasn't going away. So I had to attend to that in a very swift way because everyone was quite worried what was happening down there. And so this led to the womb work that I was once representing. This then sort of led more into sacred sexuality and sexual healing, because all of what I've been offering is things that I personally have had to encounter on a very deep level. The womb work went to sacred sexuality, which then sort of coincided with all of this neo-tantric ousting that we're noticing everywhere on Facebook. You know, one teacher after the other being exposed for inappropriate action and touch and intention. And I could feel that in the tantric community all those years ago. And I wanted and needed to be in a sexual, spiritual environment to truly, truly heal and to deepen down there into my body and to feel as clear with my sexuality as I did with my heart. And so I couldn't find a straight community. I don't mean straight as in sexual preference, but straight as in vertical. So I just knew, oh my God, lo and behold, I've got to create this environment where I know it's watertight and safe. And so the last creation was Sacred Body Awakening. Yes, that's it.
So the Sacred Body Awakening, is that something that's your creation?
It absolutely is. This is 101% my little puppy that was totally inspired by my mum, by my mother. When I was a child, me and her would watch movies together like Cleopatra or, you know, The King and I. And we'd go all the way back to either ancient Egypt or the Mayans, Minoans, ancient Rome. My mum has a love of the classics. And I used to just like curl up on her lap and be fascinated by the ladies and their dresses and their hair and this kind of enchantment that was going on in these epochs, these civilizations. And it stuck with me. And it developed and developed. And then I found myself following exactly what I see on the inside and just going for it, biting the bullet and just going for it.
Yeah.
And it's been very, very, very well received.
Good. And, you know, like, I love that it's your work. I mean, I've been following some of your Facebook postings recently, and one of the things that I really admire about you is that, you know, when you find that there's something out of integrity, you don't have a fear of standing up there and saying, hey, you know, this is what I used to think, and actually, this isn't right anymore. Yes. You know, and I just want to really acknowledge you for that, because, like, you know, you're a teacher in your own right. You've got a big following, and it's not always easy to do that, is it? You know, when you've been sort of down a certain path, and then all of a sudden, a piece of information might come to light, and then, or you might have a realization, and it's like renouncing everything that you stood for at one stage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many stories and myths in the, you know, the archetype of the goddess or the priestess or the temple worker. And these stories talk about a very big transgression that happened most likely way back in the day. And that discretion got so out of hand because the people involved didn't want to admit what was happening.
And yes.
So it spread. And then it just infected everyone and everything, the whole kingdom, queendom, animals, nature, humans and children, because everybody was trying to save their face. It was like, that's nothing to do with me, when it so has. And of course, you know, the greatest archetype I look towards for guidance is Sophia. And this is exactly what happened to the Holy Sophia as well. She had a little oops moment. She kind of like created by herself, totally innocent. But that little thought form happened in a very fertile environment. And now the thought form's not a thought form anymore. It's growing. And so Holy Sophia, she tried to hide it away in a cloud and hope no one else in the Pleroma, in the divine realm, would notice. So she's like, go away, I didn't think you. But of course, this gives birth to the flipping demiurge. So these stories fascinate me, and they remind me, they breathe down my neck. Don't try to save face, and don't try to pretend you haven't done something when you have, because it's not just you who's going to be infected. It's a wider vision. So yeah, this is my little moral compass, you know. I've got this compass in my hand. Do I turn left or do I turn right? And this one keeps me straight, thank God, but it's not easy.
Oh goodness, no.
Because you feel terrible, you feel guilty, you feel ashamed. You feel like you failed.
But do you not think that that's part of the conditioning, you know, the religious conditioning, the guilt, the shame?
Yes.
Instilled into the consciousness.
Yeah. And in the Gnostics, you would call all of these energies, guilt, shame, failure, archons.
Yeah.
So these are like little anti-awakening beings that swarm you. And just, you know, give you all of these ideas and feelings, thinking they're your own, but it's an influence.
So how can people free themselves of these archons?
Well, first of all, we have to even just half realize, we don't have to fully realize, but just open our minds. Could this be true? could there really be forces of anti-awakening? Our good friend Bernard Günther, he speaks very up to date on these subjects. I believe he calls them hyperdimensional realities. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So he's giving the 2018 speech. He's right up there with our language of today, whereas I tend to speak very much from those old Gnostic understandings. But it's the same stuff. Lisa Renee, another wonderful.
Oh, I love Lisa Renee. I love her.
These people are just bringing through this information now that is not woo-woo. It's part of this Me Too. It's part of the ousting of the dodgy Tantra teachings. The pack of cards is falling. Everything is coming to light. And these influences that have always swarmed mankind, womankind, is coming into awareness. So I would say that's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowing the mind to alter, to accept that we might be surrounded by these impulses. And step number two, when you feel yourself in a dialogue or an exchange with one of these forces, you turn around and face it. You know, on the inside, you actually turn to that judgment, that fear, that shame. And just say, hey, I always use a comedy value. Because if it's too serious, you can get quite troubled by these things. So I use comedy value. I turn around and say, hey, you, stop right there. I am sovereign. I am free. And I am one with my true creator. Now, get out of here. Be gone. And they're like little black spiders. Those thought forms just retract back. They haven't gone. They've just let up for a while because they'll be back. But I see it as a light comedy, a divine comedy.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we could get quite paranoid. And, you know, the whole thing becomes like a downward spiral, which is exactly what I suspect they are wanting.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of spiritual teachings, you know, they say about the divine cosmic joke, don't they? And it's like about not taking life seriously, lining up. And, yeah, so I like that. So the first step is allowing the mind to alter, to accept that we might be open to the influences. And then the second one is not denying it, but turning around, facing it full on and saying, hey, you know, go away. You're not getting me this time. I am well. I am sovereign. I am free.
Yes. Lisa Renee, she has some wonderful slogans and statements to make in that moment. This is a little something I picked up because it's short. But I must say, when I say that word sovereign and really mean it, that word sovereign, bam, that just changes everything. It's like the frankincense. You know? These qualities just awaken you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those people who are listening in, we actually put some frankincense essential oil on before we started this interview because it raises the vibration, changes your energy field, very important oil. Yeah. So what I'd like to talk to you about is the fierce feminine and how that came about.
Well, it's all one and the same subject, really, Deborah. How best to say all of this? Well, back in my past, I got involved with a fascinating body of work, which we can just put under the banner of womb work. And it was coming from a place that was semi-true and semi-not-true. I'm going to have to be very paradoxical here.
Okay.
Bear with me, beloved listeners, and just try and get the gist of what I'm saying rather than the facts. Later, I knew, because I had matured and developed and become aligned with Sophia, which is wisdom, not fully, obviously, but enough to start getting some insights. And I knew that the source of these teachings was not pure. There was a little contamination in the field. And over the years, I had to keep cycling back round into this subject matter and to take another step and to take another step. And this process of having to take another step developed, A, the realization that, by golly, you throw enough male authoritative energy my way and I'm gonna buckle. This brought in fear and it brought in compromise and it knocked me off my sovereign, you know, grounded 2 feet on the ground place, because I was afraid of this authoritative, strong male character. Energy is the best word. And so I realized, wow, you know, I may have done a lot with the Kundalini yoga to strengthen my nervous system and glands. I may have done a lot with the womb work and developed my authentic relaxation in being in my own sexuality and the sexuality of others. But by golly, I got a lot of work to do on my voice. And I got a lot of work to do on my power and my discernment and the ability to totally erect a fierce boundary on behalf of myself and others. In other words, Deborah, I was a little bit wishy-washy.
Yeah.
And one good swipe and you could flatten me. But this interaction, this cycling in again and in again, every couple of years having to cycle back in again, was what created this nobility, this queen-likeness, who came with a voice and came with boundaries. I started to embody something of notable value and power and worth. But it wasn't a power over somebody else. It was a power that was rising within me. That was the only thing it was interested in doing. Nothing to do with anyone else. And then, of course, I realized, oh my gosh, the womb work, the feminine embodiment practice process totally depends upon a wild and ferocious and clear and uncluttered voice. And the ability not only for a woman to have her own voice, but also to go out there and protect that gorgeous natural world that we're part of. And I was so fascinated by living this that I had to write it. I had to write it. But the book that's coming out next year, Fierce, Fierce Feminine, this was very, very interesting. My inner wisdom said, whatever you do, don't write this into form. You've got to speak it into form.
Mm-hmm.
We found a nice little bit of software called Dragon Software, which I thought, oh, I love that name. So with Dragon Software, you can go off for a nice walk in the mountains, speak your chapter into your little dictaphone, come home, replay your dictaphone in front of the main computer, and lo and behold, your text appears. And when this happened, a whole level of writing appeared on the page. because it was my voice. It was the spoken version rather than something that was typed.
Yeah, very different energy, isn't it?
Extremely different energy. And even, you know, my nearest and dearest, my parents, my friends, they would all know when I'd done a Facebook post via Dragon. They're like, you just done it again, didn't you? I'm like, yeah, I did. They could tell.
How interesting.
They could tell when it was coming from my brain and when it was coming from my being.
Mm.
Yeah. So yes, fierce feminine. That is how that happened.
So give us, you know, some nuggets about from the book. You know, what's the aim of the book?
The aim of the book is, it's a hologram actually. Peppered throughout the book are 13 sorrows of the world. My 13 sorrows. The things that flippin' obliterate my heart. From factory farming to nuclear weapons to stoning of women. And these pieces, they're only about one paragraph long, but they're coming from the deepest part of my heart. So if my personal content isn't gonna ignite you to go on this journey to find your own authentic voice, then these sorrows of the world will come up from behind and kidnap you. Because it's not factual information. I'm not delivering factual information. I've tapped into my human heart and the anguish that's inside of it because of all of these things that are going on.
Mm.
But then there's another part, which is the naming of what's going on, raising the consciousness. This is what's going on in the Houses of Parliament. This is what's going on in the American jury system, justice system. This is what's going on in our healthcare. But it's coming from the voice of fierce feminine. And I'm hoping, and I think it's gonna happen. Men and women are gonna read this book, and they're gonna get it at the level of the heart, and they're also gonna get it at the level of the solar plexus. Something is gonna ignite. You won't be able to read that book and go, oh, that was a nice read.
Yeah.
At the end of it, you're going to be devastated.
Yeah. I remember the course that you did on the fierce feminine, and, you know, like really tapping into what is it that is going on in the world that is causing you the most pain, like the most painful thing for you to witness. Yes. And that could be like the fracking, deforestation, all these issues. And, you know, like the Dalai Lama said, you know, it's the Western women of the world that will create these changes.
Yes.
And, you know, I think we have to rise and stand together. Like what's going on with the fracking in Lancashire is creating this movement like a standing rock.
Mm.
And it takes people to stand up and be counted. And, you know, if everybody within a 10-mile radius of that fracking site in Lancashire went out there in peaceful protest, you know, just to bear witness and to stop what's going on like they did at Standing Rock,
yes,
people would take notice. And, you know, it can't be washed over, but everybody has to rise and stand together.
Absolutely. 101%. Yeah. This, you know, the matrix, this world that we call society is not worth saving. You know, in the past, we've all kept our little heads down, stayed in the comfort zone, you know, like, oh, this too shall pass. No, it is. No, it won't. This will not pass. And there is nothing worth saving. This comfort zone, you know, you and your little house with your job and your mortgage, it's not worth saving. It doesn't bring comfort. It brings death.
Yeah.
Not just your death, death of so many. It's not worth saving.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Rise, fight.
The systems have to crumble, don't they? The systems have to crumble for the new to emerge.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And, you know, recently, the last couple of days, I was saying, back in the flipping underworld again. the underworld, what I realised now, I thought I could not compromise with the underworld, bargain. But bargaining with the underworld only sends you deeper into it. If you're in the underworld, and us humans, we are going, all of us, into the underworld, the dark night of the soul. And that process demands everything, every morsel. We're left naked. And if we allow that beautiful stripping and that nakedness, we may, and it is really only a may, we may be reborn. And I'd say a heck of a lot of us are going to cling on to that underworld and dig our nails in and refuse to be taken down. So we'll just stay there.
Yeah. Another teaching really, isn't it? What you resist persists.
Yes.
And, you know, I think we need to embrace every aspect and then, you know, get to the core of who we are and then what we want to create.
Yes.
As the creator of our reality, we can take that wherever we choose.
Yes.
Once we claim our sovereignty.
Absolutely.
And not being, you know, kept down by these lower vibrations like the fear and, just to have a vision of what it is that we want.
Yeah.
The world that we want to create around us. Because when we change, everything around us changes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like in the Matrix, you know, like we're all part of this world stage, playing out roles so that we can take these experiences back to the collective.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, I think what happens is that people just get absorbed into thinking that this is actually real.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
So
many forces whose role it is to give us that experience. All of this is real.
Yeah, and we're creating it all for our own experience to claim our sovereignty and create what we want.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So the more people that waken up to the fact that they are sovereign,
yes.
Well, then, you know, and I think all that's playing out at the moment, all these dramas, these stories, is just part of that awakening process. So it's actually to embrace it and not to fear it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
With all of these people coming out at the moment, I often realize, I often ask myself, do they realize that if they were to just apologize so deeply and so sincerely, that we'd go, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I know I would. I know I would.
Yeah.
All of them, pedophiles, dodgy tantric teachers, who else has come out at the moment, you know, film directors, if they could go to their deep humility and say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I've hurt so many people. And if we could feel that, I'd be the first one to sling my arm over that person's shoulders. Say, it's okay.
Yeah.
But we don't. We refuse to apologize. We just won't confess.
So, but you know, this is about ego though, isn't it? You know, and holding on to ego. But also we have to have compassion that maybe not everybody is in that place where they can see what's going on and they're still embroiled in the stories and in, you know, the drama that plays out. Yeah. And so, you know, from the way I see it is that, you know, we have to come from a compassionate heart. And when we are in that place of oneness, knowing that we are part of the whole creation, they're an aspect of us, reflecting back to us. So actually, what's right, what's wrong? It just is, with no judgment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful, Deborah, beautiful.
You know, so when we're coming from that place, everything's always perfect.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very peaceful, speaking
yeah.
with you. You always mellow me out.
So, I believe you're going to be coming over to the UK later in the year?
I am, yeah. I'll be back. Pete and I will be back with my parents for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do, well, I'm going to do a sacred body in Cirencester. And then another one in Glastonbury around the springtime.
I'm going to be there in January. Will you be there in January?
Yes, definitely, definitely. Just for our own little personal visit.
Yeah.
Come up or down and just say hi to everyone and, yeah, go to the usual places.
Wonderful. So you're going to be, how many workshops are you planning on running in the UK?
Well, just, I'm going to do one in December, 15th and 16th in Cirencester.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I think it's about the 23rd or the 24th of March, the Glastonbury, Sacred Body Awakening in Glastonbury. And then in spring, over to Ireland. And yes, sorry, I'm being very vague. Slovakia and what's the other one? Hungary.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so that's nice. It's going into other countries.
Oh, that's fabulous. And so what are you doing? Are you training facilitators?
No, these will be just little weekend workshops.
Mm-hmm.
Where people can come for their own personal experience and deepening.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I had a really big realization on the Fierce Feminine Day that we did at the ashram in Glastonbury. You know, you took us through like a process, like a meditation of the Hieros Gamos.
Mm.
And that made such a huge difference with me. I find this marrying of the masculine, the feminine, the divine child, you know, within me. And that has stayed to this day. And it's like, you know, before I was like longing for a relationship and now all that has completely dissolved.
Oh, wow.
It's like I don't need anything outside myself.
Yeah.
So I just want to say thank you for that. It was like really profound.
Pleasure. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. And now I'd like to thank you for your time today. Before we finish, is there anything else that you'd like to mention to people listening in?
I don't think so. No, I think we've covered some really, you know, current moment energies at this stage. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to throw in my last little slogan, which is whenever you're in the stages of creating or conceiving, you're working on creating a project together and you notice that there's a blemish and this might be an energy between the team. There's a something in the field. Don't go on and continue to create it. Pause there. Stop there. See if that little thing can disappear back into wholeness. But if, yeah, learn from my mistake, not mistake, learn from my lesson, learn from my great and noble lesson, because it'll only spread and you'll have to go back and clean it all up.
Yeah.
Yes, ladies, we are potent creatrixes and we have this fabulous consciousness now. We are aware, we can see, our intuition does say, hey, sweetie, something's off. Please listen.
Yeah.
Wait for it to be 100% pure. And then bring it out into the world.
Very wise.
Right.
Yeah, very wise. And I think the other thing that I'd add to that is about going in and finding your own truth, because everybody has their own truth and that truth actually changes. Depending on what stage of the journey you're on.
100% right, Deborah. We're all flying around trying to learn something from someone else.
Yeah.
And our unique, never seen before creation is inside. by all means, go to others, learn a few steps and tricks along the way. But your great sacred offering that no one else has dreamt up is inside.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I would never say don't use any other spiritual teachers, because we learn a lot from each other. Absolutely. But it's about taking, you know, those messages, going within, sitting with it and resonating, you know, is this my truth?
Yes.
And taking the bits from it that resonate and like leaving the other bits behind.
Yes.
Yeah, I've learnt so much from so many people that I've been blessed to work with on my journey.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
Gangaji.
Yeah. Yeah. If people want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Well, you just come to the website, which is my name, anayasophia.com.
How do you spell that?
AnayasophiA.com. Facebook, Instagram, or whatever it's called. I can't remember if it's Instagram.
Instagram.
Gram.
Yeah.
Yes. Lots of little video snippets on YouTube as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us today and your journey, and also for having the courage to always speak your truth.
Thank you, Deborah.
Blessings on your journey. Blessings to Pete. I love how the two of you work together so beautifully. And you know, like I remember when going back to your first feminine workshop again, how Pete and another man came in at the end and held that space so incredibly for a huge healing to take place, and that takes strength and courage, and it was just an honour to witness.
Yeah.
So blessings to the two of you and for all that you do.
You too, Deborah, and may you just continue to go from strength to strength to strength to strength. Yeah.
Thank you, dear sister. Lots of love to everybody. Thank you for listening in today to this Mastery Path Connections interview. Thank you to Anaya Sophia coming in from France to share her wisdom with us. If you have any questions or comments, do feel free to reach out and post them. So thank you for everybody, and look forward to connecting with you again.